given that that's the case, it's really just all about knowledge and information and support and cheerleading and being kind.
Green Hero. Hi, friends, and welcome to the Green Hero Podcast. This is Ricard, founder of Green Hero, your go-to source for making plant-based eating easy and enjoyable. Each week, we'll be digging into the inspiring journeys of people who live a plant-based lifestyle to tease out the most effective and fun ways to add more plants to your life.
Green Hero. Green Hero. Green Hero.
Today's guest is plant-based athlete Dotsy Bauch. Some of you might have seen her in the movie The Game Changers or heard her speak on the Rich Roll podcast. She's a 7-time track cycling U.S. national champion, former world record holder, 2-time Pan American gold medal winner, and a silver medalist in team pursuit at the 2012 London Olympics. Beyond being an athlete, she's also the founder of Switch for Good, a nonprofit that helps people drop dairy. Switch for Good launched in early 2018 with a television commercial that aired on NBC and ABC featuring 6 Olympians and proved that cow's milk does not have to be a part of a high-performance diet. So, Dotsy, welcome. Thank you for joining us. And it's an honor to have you on the show.
Well, thanks for finding me. I'm excited to do this with you.
Yes. And one thing I just wanted to say to everyone who's listening, because it feels like the word Olympian is like thrown around in the media a lot, and it seems almost like every person has gone to the Olympics. And I just wanted to make it clear for everybody who's listening, because, you know, that's the Olympics now and it's Winter Olympics. So everybody here Olympics. But I actually did the math here, and it seems like that's only 150,000 people have gone to the Olympics ever. And that's 0.00002% of the world's population.
Thank you for doing that math. Yes. As everyone knows, every 4 years, you know, the summers every 4 years and the winters every 4 years, we see it every two. But in the Summer Olympics, there's about 10,000 athletes total, like each one. And yeah. Then the winter, though, is about half. So it's just about 5,000. You know, it's just less. There's less sports in the Winter Olympics. And I guess there's less things you can do when it's freezing cold than when it's slightly warmer. I don't know.
But. Yeah, I hear you. My calculation might be even less people than who's gone to the Olympics. And then,
well, no, they've been going on for, you know, 100 years. So I think you're probably, and then obviously in early years, it was probably 500 athletes in the summer. And, thank you for that.
So just the athletic performance needed to win a medal is just exceptional. And you did that by only eating plants. So how did you get into plant-based eating in the first place?
I had a magical soul shift moment. I was one of those that it was kind of a little bit of an overnight thing. And I know we're going to talk about that it does not have to be overnight, that it is, you know, perfection is an illusion. So you don't have to do, if you're thinking about trying it, you certainly don't need to do it in one day or in 1 week or even in 1 year. But I am an all-in type of gal. That's just how my personality seems to roll. So it started doing a deep dive into understanding our food system and what goes on behind closed doors in our food system, and was shocked and horrified and sad. I remember just feeling so sad that this was the reality for all of these billions and billions of beings. And I just decided, you know what? I'm not going to be a party to this anymore. I don't need to look any further. I'm going to have to shift what's on my plate. I don't want faces on my plate anymore. And I grew up in the South. I grew up in Kentucky, and there was always a face on my plate for 35 years, every single plate at every single meal. So it was a big shift, but I just had this feeling deep inside, even though it was a couple years out from Olympics. And mind you, I hadn't made the Olympic team yet. I mean, I didn't, you know, make the actual team until, 4 months before. So it felt like it could be a risk, but I just always had this feeling inside of me that I was making this decision and it was for the goodness and of others, and and that it wasn't going to steer me wrong. I've been asked so many times, you know, weren't you scared that you wouldn't make the Olympics? Because, you know, was this going to work? And were you going to be able to build enough strength and have enough stamina and continue on the, you know, progress towards the Olympic Games? And I just wasn't worried. I thought, and then I also thought, like, what does that say about me if I am worried that I'm not going to make a team of a sporting team at just a well-known sporting event? I mean, the Olympics come and go, and I go back to what I see as destruction and horror and pain, and put that back on my plate for 100% ego-driven, self-focused reason. I was like, oh, I wouldn't be able to live with myself. So here we go. So I dove in, and I didn't know what I was doing, really. But I did love plants, even though I also loved eating animals. I naturally loved eating plants too. So I just made some shifts, figured out where the the best, most most variety of proteins came from in plant foods. Figured that out, which was, you know, like a one day journey. I mean, you just figure it out, and then off I went, and it was extraordinary. It really was. Everything changed for the better.
Oh, wow. So it was basically from just eating a full like animal diet and like eating meats, and then one day to the other, you were like, I'm going full 100% vegan. That was kind of how it worked out for you.
It was full vegetarian, and I hadn't dug into eggs and dairy yet. And so then, you know, as those of us who are, not eating animals or animal products, it tends to be a rabbit hole that you go down, and you learn a little more and a little more and a little more. And, so after some time, couple months, I just started digging deeper and understanding more about animal products, and really learning not only are they horrifyingly cruel, but they're also way worse for me. Let's just speak eggs and dairy than even the meat in a variety of different areas, most notably inflammation and inhibiting my repair and recovery. So, those came next, and the hardest thing for me. The two hardest things for me were eggs. My athletes tend to do a lot of eggs. They're easy. They're easy to digest. And so it just tends to be a typical breakfast food. It's fast and fast down the gut, through the gut, I guess you could say. So those were really challenging. And then cream in my coffee. That took, oh gosh, that was hard. I could not find anything. Nowadays, they definitely have creamers, right? But back then it was just plant milk. It wasn't, they didn't have cream, and I was a half and half girl. So that was painful, that transition. But anyway, now they have a lot of wonderful real creamy.
Yeah. The plant milk has changed like over the years. I remember the first time I tried soy milk, which must have been like in the early 90s. And like the comparison to the plant milk that exists right now, it's uncomparable. It's so much different, especially for coffee. That's for sure.
Yeah,
what did you substitute with eggs? If eggs was like such a big thing for you in eating for sports as well, like what did you start to eat instead?
Well, I tend to really crave savory in the morning. I always find if I do something that's a little sweeter, let's say I do oats and I do fruit and some nuts, I feel hungry an hour later, which is fine. I mean, I don't mind eating again, but it's inhibited to the time that you have in a day if you're all feeling hungry every hour or something. So I really find that I need a little bit more protein and definitely some fat in the morning. Then I'm satiated for like 4 hours, especially if I'm going to go train, right? Which I'm not training like I was before. But good old tofu scramble that I find just as easy. I put it in the tofu press overnight, so it's, you know, get us all the water out and it's nice and dry, and just scramble that up with a ton of nutritional yeast and garlic and paprika and salt and pepper with a real grainy toast, like a 10 grain toast and smashed avocado and lemon juice. That's just my jam. Good. And hot sauce on the tofu.
That sounds good. Have you tried the, I can't remember the name of it, but this Indian black salt that tastes exactly like eggs. It's kind of a sulfur thing.
Yeah, like sulfur kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now crazy, I think eggs smell disgusting. So that would not be for me. You know, it's funny how that, you know, your taste buds and your experience, your palate just totally changes. Now they smell like sulfur baths to me, which stinks. So, but if anyone's craving,
They can try it out.
Yeah.
And for you as an athlete as well, like what did you see like physically that was like a difference for you? And was that gradual or did you see things like kind of immediate that it changed as well?
Well, there were some things that were quite immediate, which was surprising, and other things that took a little bit of time. So the first thing I noticed was how I felt in the morning when I woke up. So we haven't mentioned this, but I was on the Olympic podium at 39 and a half. So, you know, mm-hmm. I'm like 36, 37. So I'm a lot older than, you know, the others going for my spot, call it, in the Olympics. And so recovery and repair, overnight recovery and repair slows down as we get older, as we age.
Yep.
So the first thing I noticed was when I would wake up in the morning, I would normally wake up with what we call an athlete's hangover, which feels similar to an alcohol hangover. You just feel dry and groggy and foggy and sore. I would wake up every morning normally feeling like that. And that changed really quickly. I'm talking within like a few weeks where I woke up and I thought, gosh, my joints don't feel as sore. I don't feel as inflamed. I feel like I could, you know, go out the door on the bike in an hour or so. And usually it would be like 3 hours before I'd ever even think about training for the couple of times. Usually train twice a day. So that was cool. And I kind of was like, is this a placebo? Kind of what's going on? I mean, this can't really be the change of the diet, but it most certainly was because it kept up and it's never stopped actually. A little bit slower was my ability to continue to gain muscle and put on muscle and put on muscle weight. I had come to track cycling from road cycling and road cycling. Body types, you know, we're talking long distance, tours really tend to be a lot more, a smaller frame, a lot more lithe, a lot thinner. I had quite a lot of muscle to put on my hips and glutes and hamstrings, to continue to get stronger. My event is from a standing start. So you're putting out about almost 1,000 watts off the start line.
Yeah, wow.
So I had a lot of muscle tissue to gain all of those, you know, the 4 years leading into the Olympics. And that was, I think, probably my greatest fear and my coaches too, that I wasn't going to be able to maintain and continue to add muscle tissue to my frame.
Yeah.
But it didn't change at all. And a matter of fact, I felt like it sped up because my recovery was becoming so quick that I was able to train more and harder. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the athletes. I mean, that's their jam that's why cyclists blood dope. Sometimes people don't realize that. They think it's just to just feel really amazing and be really fast on the bike. But a lot of it is so that you can recover faster and do more work, because the athlete that can do more work and put out more work is going to be the better athlete because you have had more training, you've had more tear down, which means you can build up stronger. So that is why I was able to do longer weight training sessions and more weight training sessions and be able to recover from them. So I was able to put on quite a bit of muscle. Yeah.
Wow. And was your diet when you were training this much, like how was the diet as well? Did you eat just like a lot of quantity of food? Did you focus on like certain thing? You said tofu before. Was there other things like legumes and salads? Like what did you eat to kind of build muscle?
Yeah, many hard training days when we were doing double days, I would go through, I would burn, I should say, about 6,000 calories a day. So I had to replenish those, right? I mean, definitely at least replenish them and sometimes take in a little bit more. So that's a lot of food in general, whether you're eating animals or plants or whatever you're eating. That's a lot of food. And my teammates and I used to call it force feeding, because you do get to a point where you're just tired of you're tired of eating, but you've got to get it in. So in those times, you know, I would do a lot of shakes and smoothies and soups. Things that I could get down that were easy to digest, and I didn't have to do a lot of chewing and sitting there actually at a table eating. It sounds weird, but you get really sick of that. So drinkable stuff that it was high calories. So high density caloric types of foods. So in shakes, you know, that would be like a rice protein or a hemp protein, like a brown rice protein or a hemp protein. Or a soy protein or a combination of all three. I like to just, you know, whatever I had in the cabinet. And then, you know, high caloric foods, some fruits, but I also used to put beans, legumes in the smoothies. You can't really taste them. Garbanzo beans are the ones where you can't, you know, you can hardly taste them.
I know. I do the same.
Yeah. So it was just jacking the calories up, and then nut butters. That would jack the calories up as well. So, you know, big scoops of almond butter or cashew butter in the smoothies, and they would be a pretty good size. But when I was, you know, eating food that I was chewing, it was definitely a lot of legumes. I love all of the ancient grains too. Those are all, almost all of them are complete proteins, and they just make me feel so satiated and so energized. So, you know, just bulgur wheat and millet and farro and brown rice and just, you know, all the quinoa, all the different ancient grains. I still tend towards those. If I eat a bowl of those, I mean, I'm not hungry for 5 hours. You know, it just really makes me feel solid and full and energized and light. You know, they're not heavy foods, but they really satiate you. It's amazing. So lots of grains and legume combos. Yeah.
Yeah. And what you mentioned there as well, like feeling light in the body, that's myself as well, like eating plants, like that's something that you feel like a huge difference. How was that also like being an athlete that you kind of felt like lighter in that kind of sense? Was that also like a benefit to you that the food was not so heavy?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yes. So nowadays when I'm, you know, just a regular civilian and not training to be an Olympian, I noticed that you just, it's nice to just feel, like you said, kind of feel light and not, I don't think I've had a stomach ache. I know I haven't had a stomach ache in any way, shape or form having to do anything with food since I switched over to plants. And that's like 10 or 11 years ago now. I mean, it's just, you feel like you can eat a meal and go for a vigorous walk with the dog 5 seconds later. Like there's no need to lay down for a bit. So as an athlete, when you're pushing your body to the nth degree and you're constantly up against the wall like that, it does, you're right, it does feel nice to feel light, because light means agile and light means resilient. And that's what you need, right, in your training. So I never thought of it that way, but that is how it made me feel. And I felt like I could just bounce back to the next training session easier than before.
Yeah. And so if we now transition a little bit from how your life with plants and how you used it like for training yourself, and now more to switch for good, like when did you feel like you wanted to help others doing this switch, and like why was the reason to do this?
Well, I retired after the Olympic podium in 2012, and you know, I had made this shift on my plate, in my diet. And I was just kind of super excited and on fire to just, you know, kind of be in the movement. And so I started out just volunteering in anything, you know, I mean, I would leaflet, I would write, I would, you know, whatever anybody could possibly, you know, need, any organization or anybody doing this work. And I just kept pursuing, you know, activism. I think at my heart of hearts, that's me. I'm an activist. I have been since I was a little girl in a variety of different ways. And so I guess I knew that I would eventually probably find my own footing as an activist and possibly start something. I didn't know that it was necessarily going to be an organization, but as you mentioned, our impetus was that commercial on NBC, right? With six different Olympians, seven different Olympians from four different countries saying, you know, no, cow's milk is not a health food and this is not what we consume to win medals. And the reason behind that and the and being so frustrated by dairy is because the dairy industry is the title sponsor of the United States Olympic Committee. Well, a lot of people don't know that, some people do, but I had kind of gone through my career with having a lot of dairy pushed on me, let's say. I mean, it was just always in the cafeteria at the Olympic training centers where I trained a lot in Colorado Springs, a little bit in Chula Vista at those training centers. And so, you know, as I made my shift a couple of years before Olympics, it was, you know, I saw things real differently and was very frustrated by that being pushed on athletes and you know, sold a bad bill of health and a bad bill of performance. So, Switch for Good was born from that. Interesting.
For you, like when you did this transition was personal, but now with Switch for Good, you work with other people, like creating awareness. How do you feel like changing other people's behavior? How is that different? And have you learned anything on that journey?
I've definitely learned, you know, people make their own decisions. People take action when they decide they want to take action, not because you told them to take action, not because you guilted them into taking action. Mm. And that's probably the greatest thing I've learned about behavior change, culture change, how people decide to make change. We've done quite a many deep dives into that to really understand so that we can be effective activists and effective in helping people transition. And so that, given that that's the case, it's really just all about knowledge and information and support and cheerleading and being kind.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think like for us as well with Green Hero, what we've learned is basically that shaming doesn't work. Like when people start to feel bad, then to do less and like take it away, like they feel discouraged. Instead, what like just celebrating every plant-based meal that they do or every little product that they are just keep eliminating, or I don't like to say eliminates. I mean, it's like add a plant product or add a plant-based meal to the diet. Yeah. Like celebrating that and feeling that it's okay to eat the other thing and that the transition that they're doing can take the time it takes. I think that has been a big learning for us and has really been like a positive thing for sure.
Yeah, amen. I agree.
And what's next for Switch for Good? Like, what are you guys up to at the moment?
So we work, as we just mentioned, in behavior change and culture change and have a variety of different vehicles for people to take the route to dropping dairy and detox from it. But we also work in governmental policy change, and we also work in you know, corporate change, corporate takeover change. So one of the most recent I guess it was kind of a stunt that we played, was with Starbucks and encouraging them to drop their plant milk upcharge, which depending on where you live in the US anyway, is 70 or 80 cents. And so we did a stunt where we released an announcement that Starbucks had dropped their plant milk upcharge. We did it on December 9th. We were guided by the Yes Men, who are a group of activists in not just in the plant-based world, but activists in general. Their whole careers have been built on this kind of brandalism type of activism. So it got quite a lot of attention, and we got Starbucks' attention. And today, actually, a Guardian article came out about all of it and just the issue behind upcharging for plant milk and how destructive cow's milk is on the environment. And then also something that Switch for Good has kind of brought forth, or I guess I would say kind of added to the national lexicon, is this idea of dietary racism, where, you know, when a white majority is making decisions for minorities that greatly affect them, it's really not only ignorance, because it's definitely that, but it's also a form of dietary racism, even if it's unintentional. And we have a really big problem in the United States in our school system, where dairy is pushed on all people, but it especially makes children of color very sick, because lactose intolerance affects 70 to 98% of people of color in a really great way, and makes them very ill. So that's probably something you know, that's the most recent that we've been proud of in being able to bring awareness to the issue. We all know a lot about the issues of the animals and our own human health and the environment. But when it comes to food justice, you know, dairy plays a very big role in food injustice. So,
yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's for sure. And who impresses you at the moment in the plant-based space, like an organization, brand, or person that you think is doing like great work at the moment?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. I'm not much of a hero type gal. I mean, I appreciate, you know, all the different variety of steps that different people are making. I certainly, you know, I have a great affinity for and love Robbie and Klaus over at Plant Based News. I know how hard they work. So I know that's part of the respect that I have, that they are, it's almost like they never shut off and they're just so incredibly passionate. And the way that they, you know, it's a news organization, but I feel like it, you know, you really are always, they're just on the forefront of the way that they share what they're sharing and the variety of different ways that they do. So I don't know. I'm just really big fans of theirs. So people out there have not. So, yeah.
Yeah. I like their stuff too. And it's interesting as well. They're located in the UK, right?
They are. Yeah. And something that I should mention, because that's what I've been working with them recently on, because they are going to be the platform, one of the platforms that the film Milked, M-I-L-K-E-D, you can just go Milked on the internet. I think it's nz.com because it's the Kiwis made it. It's a film out of New Zealand that actually won the award for best audience film. Like the audience loved it the most at the New Zealand Film Festival some months ago. And so that, by the time this airs, it probably will have released. And that I love their work in how they did that film and how they exposed behind closed doors and how they exposed the industry in New Zealand, but how the film ends with so much hope. So definitely people check out Milked when it is released. And they
No, I definitely think so. That sounds really interesting. I have seen the trailer for it. I'm really looking forward to see it as well.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah. One thing that's interesting in the UK, so I don't know if you're aware, but the UK actually launched their new food strategy for the next coming 10 years. And they are committing that the entire population of the UK is going to cut their meat consumption with 30%.
30%. In the coming, significant.
Because otherwise the UK won't meet their sustainability goals for the coming 10 years. So I think this is like a very big thing that's happening there. It's the first country I have come across that on a governmental level is doing something like this. And they're putting like hard number on this.
That's brave and bold and incredible, and we should follow. We should.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Because it's a little bit different here in the US, right? Because a lot of the awareness is what you guys are doing, activism, it's brands that are pushing out things, but on the like the legislative level, it's going a little bit slower. Right now here in New York, we have a new mayor that's plant-based and he's pushing this very hard. But it almost seems here in the U.S. that every topic becomes a political topic, and
it does seem that way.
And they move really slow when that is happening.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a shame.
Yeah, I see we're coming up to time here, so I just wanted to ask you as well, for anybody who's interested in following you online, like where can they find you online in the best way, on social or websites?
Yeah, I'm not super active myself, but Switch for Good is definitely there. I mean, if you want help with any aspect of your journey, we're at switchforgood.org. So it's switch, the number 4, good.org. And then also we're Switch for Good on Instagram and TikTok and all the others. I do have I'm Vegan Olympian on Instagram. And sometimes I pipe in, but not very often anymore. I don't know. It's not so much my jam. the social media thing. Maybe it's my age, but there's some wonderful activists on there, so it's good.
Yeah. All right. That sounds awesome. Well, Dotsie, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You too.
Thank you so much. That was our episode for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Ricard Bjørkdal, and I'll see you next week for another conversation from our colorful plant-based world. And of course, Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast or share this episode with a friend. If you haven't already, you can also find Green Hero in the App Store. Download our app and start enjoying a plant-forward lifestyle. You can also find us on the web at the URL greenhero.life and on Twitter and Instagram, where we operate under the handle Green Hero Life. All right, see you next week. Bye-bye.